I picked small groups in Japan, which is not a very exciting sounding topic, but it's one we can go several different directions from. Nancy and I have lived in Japan for 8 years, and a lot of our work since then has been involved with Japanese culture or Japanese language. I am currently self-employed. I'm an interpreter and translator in the Japanese language. I do most of my work with technology-related subjects. Computers and electronics are a great deal of what's coming out of Japan, so necessarily a lot of it is skewed that way. I'm not an engineer to begin with. The part of what I think is interesting in contrasting American and Japanese cultures is that a lot of the things that we most take for granted are the exactly are not translatable directly into Japanese culture, and a lot of the things that people in Japan take for granted don't translate very well into American culture. So in the process of comparing even our basic assumptions, we really learn a lot about each other. I want to be as fair as I can to people in Japanese culture, in the Japanese culture, and people in the American culture, and at the same time see if we can make some contrast and sort of friendly criticism of each other and ourselves. The topic for the summer, the image of God, is one that I find really interesting when we're talking about Japanese culture, because if you're going to take the closest equivalent for God in the Japanese language, you have this word kami, which is a very different concept from what we in the Western tradition mean when we speak of God. The image of God to me conjures up a big sort of an external cosmic scope and a human created in the image of something which is kind of limitless. The Japanese religious experience is a combination of an indigenous set of beliefs, which generally collectively referred to as Shinto, and Buddhist teaching, which has come through Asia from India into China and so on. And I can't really come up with, if I were stuck in an interpreting situation to translate the word the image of God, that would be enough to freeze me up for quite a while. I'd have to sit and stew about that. The closest thing I could come up to an equivalent would be, to ring a bell in the Japanese listener's mind, might be the Buddha within, which is really a very different concept, really. It has nothing to do with external gods. The Japanese word kami belongs to the indigenous Shinto religion, and kami is really a spirit, and it's attached to geographical features. That is, kami in the original Shinto tradition don't move around from place to place. There's a shrine on the top of Mount Fuji, which is represented sort of sanctifying the spirit of the mountain. Now that spirit isn't suddenly going to move down to Kyushu or move to Hawaii just because someone moved there. That's the spirit of that mountain, and that's where it's always going to be. Consequently, you don't find Shinto shrines in places outside Japan. It's just not a portable religion, and the very concept is kind of funny to a lot of Japanese, that there would be Japanese kami anywhere other than in Japan. It simply can't happen. So the image of God right away isn't a concept which translates very well into Japanese. There are a lot of other things that don't translate really well. But we are together on this planet, and for better or worse, I think we and our fellow humans in Japan are created in the same image. I will be speaking from an American point of view, somewhat colored by experience overseas, by looking back at America from an overseas point of view, and I'm still learning what it is to be an American, so maybe my understanding of this isn't quite complete yet. The experience that Americans have in Japan produces a really wide range of reactions. Some people will go over there and say, Japan is really just the same. We're all really the same underneath. And others will go over and say, you know, we're so totally different. I don't see how we can possibly have anything to say to each other, possibly communicate. Some people will say, over there, everybody's basically honest and decent if you know how to communicate with each other. And others will come back and say, everybody's dishonest over there. They're all trying to get your money. They're trying to steal your patents. They're trying to do everything dishonestly. Some people will see Japanese as very introverted and staid and reserved, and others will say that they're very emotional, and both of these are true. So I'm not one who deals in social theory very much, but I feel like I'm qualified as an observer because most of the years I've spent in Japan have been working in jobs that Japanese normally hold. and that normally Japanese operate in and work in. And one of the main situations that I've had to learn to come to grips with in working in Japanese organizations as a member of the organization, not as a foreign guest, is this small group dynamic. Yesterday we talked about the Japanese education system and some of the words that came out of that, which I'd like to put up on the board, have some fairly negative connotations. But when we went around the room and asked for people's impressions, we came up with the word rigorous, disciplined, structured, goal-oriented, stressful, someone said competitive, I'll stop here. These are definitely words that have a real grounding in the Japanese educational experience. Despite individuals in the education system who care a great deal about changing some of these restrictions and limitations, the system as a whole probably is one that can be characterized as rigorous, disciplined, structured, and so on, and to the students, stressful and competitive. Every one of these concepts has a flip side, an opposite. And let me ask you to brainstorm a little bit about what the opposite of this might be before I get into my storytelling.
Cooperative, maybe.
Okay. Opposite of competitive, is that okay?
Mm-hmm. Relaxed.
Okay, relaxed. Opposite of stressful. Okay. These are similar. What would the opposite of rigorous, disciplined?
Lax.
Yeah, well, I would say lax might be on opposite of discipline.
Lethargic.
Okay. That's a word I have trouble applying in Japan, but occasionally it does come in. Let's take these as a set of opposites anyway. And when we're talking about Japanese groups and what it means to be a member of a group that is somewhat exclusive and defines itself, let's look at these sets of opposites, and we can see maybe how, as a phenomenon in Japanese society, belonging to a group allows some of these words to be applied to what it's like to be Japanese and to function in a Japanese organization. One of my favorite stories is of a day, a Sunday morning, where in Tokyo, where for reasons that aren't relevant, I was sitting in the basement of Wendy's Hamburgers on Omotesando in Tokyo, which is sort of called the Champs-Élysées of Tokyo. It's where a lot of high-priced fashionable stores and a place to stroll and see and be seen on Sunday. Sitting down in the basement as I was working through my root beer or whatever I was working on, the door opened and clunk, 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 clunk. Down came a great crowd of young folks, teenagers, early 20s, down the stairs, and they proceeded to occupy a large part of the basement down there. And the type of dress that these kids had on identified them immediately. There were black leather jackets with skulls on the back. Some of the boys had handcuffs hanging from their shoulders. One or two would have pictures of Elvis or James Dean drawn on the back. The girls had poodle skirts, bobby socks, and hair tied back like this. This was a group that hangs out together on Sundays in the park near there, and their main reason for existence is to dance together, sort of a group dance scene to a loud beatbox, boombox. And right, literally, 1 or 2 feet away will be another group, perhaps dressed the same way, or perhaps wearing loose flowing Chinese clothing, doing more expressive dances. This particular group is what would be called an amegurazoku, which means their amegura is short for American graffiti. They're trying to dress in the style of the movie American Graffiti, or early 50s style. Dress, particularly the way the boys were dressed, I reacted immediately that if I had been in an American eating establishment and a group of boys dressed like this walked in, I would probably leave.
Yeah.
I would feel threatened. However, I stayed to watch what happened. And people sat in a circle. The leader of the group stood up, introduced himself, and in almost parliamentary fashion, everybody went around in a circle, introduced themselves by their first name, where they lived, and said a couple of things about themselves. When it came back to the leader, he started giving the statement of purpose, that what the group really needed to do, what their objective was, to get together in the park every Sunday morning, and the Japanese word medatsu is what they wanted to do. Medatsu. We want to medatsu. It means to stand out. We want to sparkle. We want to attract attention. We want to really look good. He went on to say, do whatever you do during the week. If you're in school, we want you to be the best student you can possibly be. If you're working, you know, whether it's at a dry cleaners or a factory or whatever you're doing, do your work as well as you possibly can, and get together here every Sunday morning, and together we'll medatsu, we'll stand out. And with that sort of a pep talk, they all got together and went up the stairs and down the street to the park. What you just saw there was a snapshot of a script being played out, which is, if you live and work in Japan, immediately recognizable. I think it's a quintessential piece of Japanese culture. It will, the same script will be played out in a meeting of a housewives volleyball team on the local block. It'll be played out in a company marketing staff, accounting department. I haven't been there, but I would bet that when gangsters get together and meet, something like this takes place. In other words, it's a phenomenon that crosses generations. It crosses levels of culture, affluence. It's something that is a script that is learned at an early age, and that everybody respects as part of participation in a group. Stop me if you have any questions about that particular incident, or I will. I'll keep going on. It also transcends institutions, that is, corporations, schools. This type of meeting begins at the school level. Another occasion I had to participate in the same kind of incident was when a student in my high school, when I was teaching, had been discovered in a local spaghetti restaurant off school property during lunch. He decided to go out for lunch, basically. This was not allowed under school rules, leaving the property. But he had also had a shot glass of whiskey, which he was using to wash down the spaghetti. Immediately, an emergency faculty meeting was called, and with the principal and the head teacher at one end of the room, what happened was, everyone was informed of what happened, and one by one, 37, 38 members of the faculty all gave their comment on the process. Everyone was required to say something because the turn to speak was passed around the room. If you were one of the first two to speak, it was probably fairly easy to make a comment. But every comment was different. That is, you couldn't repeat what had been said before. Some of the comments included how it reflected on the entire school, how it reflected on we Japanese, what's happening to us, it's a disgrace, and so on and so on. Anyone who tried to slough off their turn to speak by making a comment that was too obvious or too shallow would be challenged immediately by the head teacher. Well, yes, we all know that, but don't you have some other thoughts on this matter? And then the turn to speak would not pass until that person had sufficiently shown evidence of thinking and contributing to the meeting process. The same process.
What happened to the kid? Yeah.
What happened to the kid? Okay. Let's take a digression here. What happened to, let's call him Kenjiro here, was that Kenjiro would be called down to the principal's office, and with the first thing the principal would do would be to go to meet to the three or four teachers that composed the student guidance section, and they would decide who would play what role in regard to discipline. Ken Jitter would be invited over to the desk of the head of the student discipline section, and the conversation would begin with the question, suppose you tell me why it was necessary to go out for lunch and drink whiskey during school hours. And then it would, either a conversation or an interrogation, whichever you prefer, given that there was no satisfactory explanation for why he did it, there was no acceptable explanation, would go on, and everything that the student said would be written down in a journal, beginning with page one. At the emergency faculty meeting, which was held at the end of school hours, it was decided that Ken Jitter would stay at home for 2 weeks. His parents were then called on the first day of the suspension to come to school and meet with the principal, in which this was all explained, that Ken Jitter was to stay at home, the parents were suitably apologetic. The principal said, stated the school's position, and home he went with his homework for the day. The next day, a teacher delegated by the guidance section would go to his school with the homework for the following day, collect the homework from the previous day, and have an hour or hour and a half discussion with Ken Jitter again about how he felt on that day, about his suspension, about his behavior, what were his thoughts, and everything, every question and answer would be recorded in a journal. This would be repeated the next day, picking up the homework, taking the new homework. In other words, no relief from homework by being suspended. And the dreaded counseling session, which most students are aware of and treat with a great deal of respect, would continue every day until the teacher decided that perhaps Ken Jitter was repentant enough, that he had reflected on his behavior enough to where he might be allowed back into school. At that point, another emergency faculty meeting is convened. The teacher from the guidance department comes back in, reads the record of the, summarizes the record of the counseling sessions on each of the previous days, and says, in my opinion, Ken Jitter now has changed his mind, he has reflected, he is probably ready to be allowed back into school. What do you think? Back around all 30 members of the faculty, opinions, stated in carefully phrased terms all the way around. And this is a real, it's not just a show. If the teachers don't feel that enough attitude change is shown, he can be suspended for another week. If they feel that it's time for him to come back, then he will be allowed back the next day. His parents will come with him to the principal's office again. The head of the teacher's guidance committee will be there, the principal will be there, and it will be formally announced to him that his attitude has, his change in attitude has been noted and he's ready to come back into school. Now, I'm going on at length, but the length of that process is very significant in how it feels to the student.
Would have made a difference if you would have been in a number one school? Would the discipline would have been different? Or more severe? Or less severe? Or is it basically the same?
It wouldn't have been any less severe,
yeah,
in a number one school. And
it would be basically the same?
Number one high school in our town has the same problems and the same methods of dealing with them. Right.
This will have taught him not to do it again. Does it happen so infrequently that there's enough time for this? This sounds a very time-consuming process.
It's very time-consuming, particularly for the teachers in the discipline section, that they have to be ready to basically sacrifice a lot of time, in addition to their normal teaching load, to do this. It's very time-consuming, and the teachers who have done 2 or 3 or 4 years on discipline duty, or guidance duty, same word, are, I suppose, recognized for this in their next assignment, and maybe they have a chance to get something a little lighter. On the other hand, if they're very good at it, they may be unfortunate enough to be back in the same situation for several years.
In the 70s, in this rural region of Japan, it happened very infrequently.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you were at an inner city school now in Tokyo, there might not be enough time to deal with all the incidents you had to deal with.
Do the other students see what's going on, other than just via the kid that's been involved?
One part of the process, thanks for mentioning that, is to inform the equivalent to the student council of what's going on. These are the student representatives of each class in that grade level.
So they can go, oh boy, I'm not doing that because so-and-so just got...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Or they might talk about it in a homeroom period.
Yeah, it will be, there is one class period per week, which is it's a full class period, not just announcements, designated as a homeroom period. And during that homeroom period, there will be a designated subject that the homeroom teacher will lead and elicit responses from every student. This is partly how the behavior is learned, but there are students who participate in this real heavily, and we'll ask the hard questions. You know, is it necessary to do this? What does it mean? Why does it reflect on this school? How does it reflect on our class? Isn't it our fault as students that we didn't talk to Kenjiro about this behavior earlier, regardless of whether or not he's bullied us or we can't stand him or, you know, whatever? One of the things that will be reflected on is the responsibility of the group in this person's lapse of behavior. So, just last week, a week ago today, I think it ended, I was an interpreter at an educational conference in which there were principals from around the country, including places like the South Bronx and Detroit and Philadelphia, and teachers from around Oregon, talking about reforming our educational system. It was widely remarked on how the Japanese system was able to get cooperation from the teaching staff in terms of putting the extra time and effort into this counseling situation, but also the parents who are come to the school office when summoned and are in basically put in a defensive position, but are entrusted with the responsibility of seeing that the student stays at home.
Parents and are more involved.
The parents are more involved. We can get back to maybe a little bit later why that is. Do parents have a choice not to be involved in this case? I'm not sure they do.
Does that put shame on the parents then in their workplace and in their extended family and their neighborhood apartment?
There's definitely a flavor of shame connected with the student who's misbehaved and has been sent home and has to require this type of counseling or home confinement. If you want to look at it in a pejorative light, it's like house arrest.
I was just wondering if the parents would pressure the child then, you know, look, you're giving our family a bad reputation.
Absolutely.
The rest of the family.
Within the family, there is every opportunity and encouragement to make that child feel the shame that's come on the family. The parent may have had to take time off without pay from work. If they're in any kind of a wage or a piecework type occupation where when you're not working you don't get paid.
Would the employer understand this? They give them time off?
Yes.
It would be the mother who would take time off, and they're most often part-time workers, so-called, and they often work 6 to 8 hours a day, but still they don't necessarily have to go every day. So for an excuse like that, they probably could take a day or two off.
I would say, I bet he'll never do it again. All this, I mean, you know, it's not a quick punishment, it goes on. I mean, you would really think about having that glass of whiskey again, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Or start counting the days to graduation.
How are Japanese teachers paid in comparison to American teachers?
Well,
paid?
In 1970, they were much worse paid, but part of that was the exchange rate. It took 365 yen to make a dollar now, and it takes about 135 today. Okay. So even the same salary is almost tripled.
But in comparison with other occupations in Japan, they weren't so badly off.
Weren't so badly off, no.
Now I think they're worse off maybe in comparison with other occupations.
To get that type of participation, for instance, with our teachers, for the most part, American teachers are paid pretty poorly, and they still donate a lot of time, and they don't really have a choice for it. I'm wondering if Japan has the same type of thing. They're paid poorly or worse off maybe than the average Japanese employee, but they still donate a lot of their own time.
They still donate a lot of their time. Donating time, I think, is more accepted as a condition of working as a teacher, and some will actually welcome that as an it's a mixed blessing for sure, but as an opportunity to be involved in students' lives beyond the school. It certainly takes time, and the teachers' union, which is not a government body but strictly rather left-leaning teachers organization is always fighting to reduce that load and try to enhance teachers' working conditions.
Japanese schools have a lot more influence in society than, for instance, American schools.
Well,
in students' lives they do, in the sense that, for example, a school can define what coffee shops a student is not allowed to go into, mm-hmm. or they have to wear a uniform when they go out at certain on the streets, mm-hmm. Or they have to wear their hair a certain way. And if you're caught doing something after school hours, the teachers may be involved in reprimanding you for that.
So they do have a lot of say in what goes on.
Yes, yeah. Definitely, more than here, yeah.
It's a lot tougher in Tokyo to track down what your students are doing after hours. We had a city of 200,000 people, and I think there were 17 high schools there. So you could almost identify a student's school at sight if they were wearing a uniform. There was a little room for confusion, but not much. In Tokyo, obviously, that's impossible.
Yeah. Be like trying to keep track of the schools in New York City or something.
Right, yeah. The point in New York City was made that most of the teachers live outside the city. Mm-hmm. And to get a teacher involved with a student's home life after hours would be practically impossible if you're a school in the South Bronx and your teachers live way out in the suburbs. That's the last thing anyone wants to do.
So being a teacher in Japan, is it a more respected profession? I have a friend that teaches in quite an affluent grade school, and she says the parents really expect almost the school to bring up the child. You know, they try to blame it all on the school if the child doesn't go straight.
In Japan, the school is entrusted with a lot more development of the student's moral and ethical development. In fact, as was remarked yesterday, that's part of curriculum. There's a textbook on moral and ethical issues that's part of what every student studies. Here, our students are involved with things like alcohol and drug. Our schools have to handle alcohol and drug dependency things, students who don't have enough to eat, parents who are absentee, teen pregnancy issues, a lot of things which are really in the realm of social welfare. Japanese schools may get involved with those as they affect their students, but I don't think society expects the school system to solve those problems on a society-wide basis. I think that's a fair thing to say.
As a matter of fact, we hear more and more teachers saying, it's not our fault, please send us some children who are ready to be educated, and we'll teach them.
Right.
You can't teach children who come to you so angry or so neglected or so hungry.
Yeah, and you have to do it away with this religion and state thing that Paul was talking about, because we expect this moral education to take place in the churches or in the home. But in Japan, you don't have that same division. It's in the Constitution, but it is almost like the moral and ethical values are taught within the culture, and so school is very much part of that, as much a part as home is. And church doesn't really exist in the way we think of it. So.
Well, I think it used to be more that way here. When I reflect on my own elementary school, it seemed like there was a strong moral thread running through it. There were strong expectations of what you were as a good citizen, as a good person.
It's changed in the last 15 years. It was that way when I was in school.
Yeah, I think as we've gotten more homogeneous in our country too, we don't have consensus on what morals are anymore.
This country's too liberal.
It's too diverse as well, I think. I think Japan doesn't have some of the problems we do that way because it's such a homogeneous culture in comparison to ours.
We have challenges from time to time by atheist groups who will challenge the teaching of anything resembling a religious-based moral tenet in the school curriculum on the grounds of, you're not going to foist that on my child kind of thing, and students are excused from this sort of thing. And I don't know if it makes teachers here more wary of mentioning things that are potentially controversial in the home. I've not been a school teacher in the U.S., so I don't know, but I suspect that that's something that teachers are frequently finding ways to deal around here. There are people in Japan who feel very strongly that they don't want nationalistic concepts or certain types of concepts inculcated in their children. but they don't have a great deal I can do or say about it. The curriculum is centrally planned, and to challenge something that's a part of the planned curriculum, you literally have to go all the way to the Ministry of Education to do it, which is beyond the means of any even fairly vocal group. Bear in mind, too, that in Japan, the same party has controlled the government for 40 years, and there has not been a change of political focus in this area either. By and large, I think we agree the Japanese schools do a very good job of certainly teaching facts. It's hard to argue with that. And what we're hearing now, I think, is that they deal more with moral and ethical issues, too. And let me move on to this this dichotomy here. One other thing I wanted to say about society and the school system, am I spelling this right?
Yeah.
Hierarchical. And I suppose the opposite to that might be egalitarian, if I can propose that as an example. Let me go back. Normally it would be your last name and your place of business, but nobody was comparing members in that gang by what school they went to or what job they were doing at that point. In society at large, some of them were probably in relatively respectable universities, and others had possibly not finished high school and were working in a small piece factory. But at that point, it didn't make any difference because they were all part of an in-group, and they were all part of a defined unit. And membership in one of these groups, as it does in our society, carries with it rights and responsibilities. And one of the rights was the right to some cooperation and egalitarian treatment. So once you're a member of one of these small groups, in a sense, it gives you the right to speak and have your view heard. It also puts you on notice that your view will be solicited when you're going around in a circle asking for someone's opinion on how well did we dance today, or what should we do with this student who's been caught drinking whiskey. If you're a member of the group, you have the responsibility to speak up, but you also have the right to expect that at some point your view will be solicited. We'll leave the higher education system out for the time being.
But it's also hierarchical.
It's also hierarchical. All opinions may not be considered equally, but there's frequently a ritual process of going around and soliciting everybody's point of view. So we have an emphasis on the needs of the group, but within the group, I'm not saying these are absolute, but I never like to say this is the way it is. For every comment you can make about Japanese society, there's an opposite side of the coin. That's what I'm trying to show here. Members in a group meeting, if it's informal enough, do have the right to interrupt each other, do have the right to challenge each other, as long as it's done in an acceptable basis. And I think even in faculty meetings in the university, you will see different professors will challenge each other in respectful language. The needs of the group are respected. The needs of the group are the reason why the group is meeting. On the other hand, no one has much privacy in a group like this. You're not really immune to criticism. You're not immune to challenge. And in a lot of cases, nobody is allowed to opt out of the process. You can't say, I'm too tired to do this, and I've got something else I need to do. Your attendance is required and expected, and falling asleep at the table is not considered a sign of good citizenship and participation. Frequently found in working in a Japanese accounting section that fatigue was never accepted as a reason for going home early. Even if you were obviously dead out on your feet, you simply can't say, I'm too tired, I have to go home. This was not allowed. If you have a personal
priority, something you have to go do, your kid has been suspended from high school for drinking, you have to go see the principal, that would be understood. But your own personal priorities are expected to be subordinated to the needs of the group, however ill-defined those needs might be. Once you're inside a group, you can enjoy it. You can be, I'll give you an example here right now about a group which was lethargic, lax, relaxed, cooperative, egalitarian, and a whole lot of fun to be in. The accounting section I worked in would work till 12 midnight or 1 in the morning at those points in the accounting cycle when all the work was piled up, and this was almost always in April. April was the worst month of the year because the Japanese year ends in March, and all the business for the year that was concluded as of midnight March 31st had to be accounted for to prepare the annual statements and so on in April. Consequently, the accountants never saw the cherry blossoms, because you'd go to work early in the morning before the sun was up, and you'd come back at night when not only was the sun down, but all the drinking parties under the cherry blossoms had pretty much wound up and everybody else was home. So you can go for years in that kind of business without ever seeing the cherry blossoms. But at certain times of the year, the schedule was more lax, and it was time to cut loose and enjoy life a little bit. And this is one of the things we'd really look forward to. We had a refinery in Okinawa, and a kind of an extended member of our group, a fellow named Miyagi, lived in Okinawa. And he'd come up once or twice a year for ostensibly meetings, but also for partying. And one of the things he was able to do was to bring fresh goat meat up with him from Okinawa. I guess he'd get a goat slaughtered in the morning before he got on the plane, and he'd come up with a big hunk of raw ginger and several ceramic tanks of awamori, a very potent beverage brewed in Okinawa. And after the day's business was concluded, we'd get together on company property in a meeting room and start eating ginger and raw goat meat and washing it down with awamori. And it didn't take long for the rigorous, disciplined, structured, goal-oriented, stressful, competitive, hierarchical business to go totally out the window. After the first round of awamori and yagizashi, have you ever yagizashi? No, it's a strange thing to eat in Japan. Raw goat is as weird in Japan as it would be here to consume that sort of thing. But it was different. So this was an occasion. It was not something you could opt out of, by the way. You consider it a ritual hazing process, perhaps. But the first time around, the section head was the first one to speak, and he would make a formal statement about how things had gone since the last party or since the last closing. Welcome new members. Have the new members introduce themselves. Then the assistant head would have something to contribute, and then we'd go around and everybody had to say their piece while the awamori was going down. And some of the more relaxed, cooperative, egalitarian rules, the way that this was enforced would be that as any one of us was speaking, if we were adjudged by popular opinion to be tooting our own horn too loudly, that building ourselves up at the expense of somebody else, people would rap on the table and we'd have to put 100 yen into the empty awamori jar. Or if you were making a joke at someone else's expense, people would say, no, boo, down with that. Down comes the jar, you've got to put 100 yen into the awamori jar.
Good for them.
Good for them, yeah. Right. I mean, this was forced breaking down of structure.
Right.
And you could see it immediately. This process wasn't complete until everybody had had their chance to stand up and play philosopher or comic, basically open mic time. And the drinks were going around. By this time we'd had three or four. And at three or four drinks of awamori, it's a miracle you can walk. But the secretary of the group, the female in the role of the Japanese female, was as we found out, a very gifted mimic. And when it came to her time, she would do imitations of each of us, calling our wives to tell them we would be late. This was humor with a real barb on it, but it was her opportunity, since she was usually on the bottom of the structure, to be on the top all of a sudden, queen for a day, and she was really good at skewering people. I had no idea she understood what I was saying to Nancy over the phone, but she picked up that I would frequently get asked to buy milk and orange juice on the way home. And that was in there. And everybody howled and pounding on the table, and you know, around it went. And the oldest member of the section made some off-color comment, and the awamori was passed around to him, and he was made to stuff a 1,000 yen bill into it. But the money went into the kitty then for the next party. And it became a ritual process of breaking down these walls. Now, if you were not part of the section, there was no way you could have crashed that party, I believe. This was another function of the small group dynamic that played itself out several times a year with the active encouragement of the leaders. It definitely made for better working conditions and more respect within the members of the group. Now, I'm going to ask you in a minute if there's anything that you see in this type of behavior that equates to what we do in American society.
I was just going to ask you, so most Japanese people have a good self-esteem, do they?
I think exercises like this build self-esteem, mm-hmm. really build it. With the recognition that it has probably been broken down in between parties, that everybody has had their self-esteem tromped on by the work schedule or by something else. It's a self-esteem building experience. Now, if you don't have access to some group like this, aren't we, are you maybe implying that it's necessary to make one, to create one, find a group that you can build self-esteem with, in some sense, whether that's a group that dances in the park on Sunday morning because you don't feel you have much fun or self-esteem in the rest of your life, or a local volleyball team, or something.
So the group is your strength, really?
The strength is in the group, mm-hmm. right. A person, an individual going up in a corporation like that, if you have to rely only on your own resources for self-esteem, it's very, very tough.
Are there any people then that don't have these small groups?
There are people who prefer not to be in them.
That would be their own choice.
That would be their own choice. There are certainly those who prefer not to party as long as others in the group would like to party. And who prefer to go home early. The awamori party would...
They're allowed to? Is there any shame?
Well, the awamori party would probably wind up around 9 o'clock in the evening, and those who want to go on to the next stage then go, and those who don't want to go home. The women in the group generally go home whether they want to go on to the next stage or not, because it would be unseemly to be out, you know, at too many successive parties. So there's a mechanism for those who want to opt out at each hour or two, every time you go on to a different watering establishment. If you don't like to drink, and you're a member of that group, and there were some who really didn't, you learn to make one glass last all night. But it won't do simply to refuse the first drink and never participate, because that's... for better or worse, drinkers around the world seem to have this kind of understanding that if you're going to be part of our drinking group, you have to drink. And that can be forced on other people, and it can be very tough to get out of. Did you have a question?
I was going to say, in this context, is everything pretty sacred? A lot of things would probably come out which could be used against you, or would be the infertile. Later on,
someone referred to this as social nudity. who came up with, was that Weaver? The process is a social removal of other people's clothes around the group. Of course, if the same thing happens in a Japanese bath, it's more than social nudity, it's physical nudity.
But I think an important point is that once you go back to work the next day, that hierarchy reasserts itself completely. Yeah. And there's no question who's also, in what rank. So in that sense, it's not used against you.
Yeah.
It's also as if anything that was said the night before, it's taboo to
bring it up.
To bring it up and use it against someone in the daytime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's just forgotten then.
It's forgotten.
It's
not forgotten, no.
Stored. Yeah, it's not you.
It's stored. Yeah.
Stored for the next party.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It is stored for the next party. You've been through a few of these.
Oh, so many.
John, you enjoy them?
John teaches at Chuo University in Tokyo as an English teacher. And I should give you
kind of parties, as you say, are very healthy and they build self-esteem, but there are parties of a small scale where people will get together and drink and just let off steam, and all the complaints and backstabbing, all sorts of terrible things come up.
Yeah, now those are not official group functions.
No.
Those are not official group functions. Those are individual gripe sessions.
Yeah. That's another way that they let off steam.
Right. And those, and the things that come out at those parties would probably not be allowed in a group drinking session because they are too destructive of other individual people. So it's for better or worse, what comes out in the group party is a constructive hazing in a way. Laughing with people. Well, no, there's some laughing at people. It's hard to know where the line is drawn. And
the strange thing is, though, that I think most Americans don't realize that if you took alcohol away from Japan, the whole society would collapse.
Only the women would remain.
Only the women.
The women would remain.
But is there, well, that brings up a whole other topic. Yeah. Is there alcoholism and is there recovery in 12-step groups in Japan? You know, these people that go to these parties that you're talking about and they're recovering alcoholics, and what do they do about that?
There's certainly alcoholism, there's a high incidence of liver disease, and all the things that would go with heavy consumption of alcohol. There are people who are unable to quit this sort of heavy drinking. I think when you get on to 40, 45, 50, and so on, people do it less. Women are not expected to drink and are allowed to opt out of drinking and go for orange pop if they want, and many do that from the beginning, just because they don't want to get halfway down.
I see a lot of people who drink consistently every day, large amounts.
Yeah.
And they show up at 8:30 in the office and they do their work. It just doesn't interfere with their life. They don't eat their kids. They don't harp on their wife. Mm. But they drink every night. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah. I thought that genetically the Japanese
I've heard that Japanese get drunk faster because of faster absorption in the small intestine and so on. There are various theories about that. Those are only good as far as generalizations go, I think.
But another thing to add here, Alcoholics Anonymous has started in Japan. Yeah. But they find that drinkers are very protected within Japanese society by their families and by their work situations. And because it's contextualized, and as you say, people usually keep going to work while they're drinking heavily, it's not recognized as a problem. Mm-hmm. And women often will try to make up by going out to work if the husband finally can't keep a job. And they don't want them to be publicly marked as an alcoholic. Yeah. But evidently it is starting to get some.
Alcohol must be cheap then. What do they mostly drink?
Ask the men.
It's not very cheap.
It's not real cheap. No, it's cheaper here.
I wonder how they can afford it. You know?
Well, I get into the sociology of drinking in Japan, which is not what I really came to talk about. But in terms of work groups and business groups, there really are only two drinks. One is beer,
and the other is mizuwari, which is whiskey and water.
Or sake.
Well, sake is on the way down.
But we drank a lot of that in the north when we were first there.
Well, that passed for central heating. different climate.
How about the crime and drug rate, since we're talking about alcoholism a little bit, is that high there?
It's much lower than it is here. Much, much lower, to the point where anyone, male or female, can walk anywhere in Japan at any time of the day or night, with only a very few exceptions, and with no need to fear for your own personal safety. It's an amazing feeling.
Isn't there punishment more severe?
Punishment more severe, and it's also more certain. This is a society where you simply can't disappear. It's very difficult to disappear. People know who you are and where you are and where you came from.
I was impressed by that. My husband and I are both in law enforcement. And when we were talking with Marco about the differences, I'd like to be a cop in Japan.
Twice a year, the local cop from the local police box would come along and lean on our doorbell bell and talk for 15 minutes about his electric guitar or his dog or where you've been or anything, and then it was thanks and, you know, on he'd go. But that would be part of his journal. I've talked to Japanese who see this and just hate it. They see it as police repression, you know, get out of my life. And I suppose I wasn't confronted with the need to live all my life under this system. I thought it was kind of quaint, you know, to talk with the local cop, for that very seldom happens here, unless they're off duty, right? But it's a means of knowing who's where and what they're doing and what your work is, and he knows all that.
They live in each neighborhood. They have a little box and a house, often, that goes with
in or near the neighborhood building.
Yeah, not in every case.
Right.
As a group, how is law enforcement in Japan?
As a career?
For instance, in America, cops normally only have cops as friends. Uh-huh. They click because of the hatred and the distaste for police and law enforcement.
Right.
Do they have the same type of thing there?
I'm sure there's a good bit of that.
But I don't.
Police generally have police as friends, but it's a circle that you're going to be in an organization. It's a national police force, first of all. Mm-hmm. The police that you see on every corner are not the county or
county,
the city
or
police,
city,
or
right.
State. They are national. It's a national organization.
All one.
Centrally controlled. And just the implications of that, think about that for a while, for control and exchange of information are
much nicer.
Yeah, right. From the enforcement point of view.
Oh, much nicer.
I have heard it remarked by sociologists who study who police talk to at parties and who criminals talk to at parties, that they frequently talk to each other. And that's a kind of a preference. And it's really interesting to note in Japan that the police always know where the gangsters are and what they're doing. To the point of where Nancy and I have a mutual friend who studied the Japanese Yakuza system. He got all of his introductions through the police. With no difficulty at all. He went to the police and said, I want to study Yakuza. They said, fine, we'll introduce you to everybody you need to meet. He stayed in Yakuza homes, was present during meetings at which contract collusions were held and parceled out. And everybody simply, I think there seems to be an agreement, rather than one side trying to eradicate the other, that there's an understanding of what realm each side can be involved in. But the degree of familiarity there in Japan seems to be really thick. And there may be even more reasons for that.
People who write about police in Japan say that the relationship between citizens and police is much less adversarial than it is here.
Yeah. Is the court system more concerned about the victim rather than the criminal? Here it seems that they're very easy on the criminal, quite often. I mean, you hear somebody doing something,
right.
And they get such a short time.
In Japan, there's much less sympathy for the criminal, far less. And prison sentences are not rehabilitation or rehabilitative in any sense of the word. They're punishment. It's
life in prison for debt for a murder is life in prison.
It's life in prison, right.
It's not out in 2 years because you were good while you were there.
No. Time off for good behavior and rehabilitation is not considered. If you're going to rehabilitate yourself, you do that on your own time after you're out.
Then again, most confrontations never make it to court.
Right.
People don't just go around suing for every little thing.
In civil cases of citizen against citizen.
Yeah.
Right, those can take 15 to 20 years to draw out because there's maybe, from our point of view, an extra degree of concern for reaching an amicable settlement rather than forcing a jury to come to a conclusion in 6 weeks.
Well, that's good too.
I would like to leave this one at one point here, since we're getting, approaching the end of the hour. The difference between the United States and Japan is considerable. Whether Japan is unique or whether the United States is unique can be debated. Sometimes I think that Americans are the oddball in the world, because we all share the creature needs of human beings. We are created in the same image, but we don't have this tremendous, the mining term is overburden, of culture, which has been there for hundreds and hundreds of years, and which is inculcated on us before we can resist it. We do have an overburden there, but it's nothing like what it's like to grow up in an old world society like Japan. The differences are there, but the distance between the two cultures is geographically shrinking dramatically. And if you live in Flat Rock, Michigan, or Smyrna, Tennessee, or Noonan, Georgia, the distance is zero. It's right there, right now. These are company towns which are dominated by Japanese industries as of this moment. What can we do to understand and adjust to these behavior phenomena that Japanese, particularly when they're just arriving, bring with them? That is, an expectation that there will be consultation among members of a work group, that someone won't simply go off and unilaterally decide to do something or change processes or simply not show up for work one day on their own without telling anybody why. From the Japanese point of view, you can see why we look like we're a bunch of loose cannons rolling in all directions, that we don't have any national policy on anything that's effective. If we wanted to have a policy on crime, why don't we decide what we're doing in Washington and just implement it? It seems like the easiest thing to do from the Tokyo point of view. They can see in us our hierarchical prejudices and our feelings of value, but then we don't act on those the same way they do. And maybe we don't go through these ritual drinking procedures where we break down our differences every so often and renew our self-esteem. There are a lot of things that we do that look unusual to them. But probably first and foremost is the way when we work in groups, we don't have any formal method for insisting on the importance of every member in a group. We don't have a method for taking care of the needs of every member of the group, or looking at defining the responsibilities of every member, unless you're at Holden, that is, you know, where equality is kind of, this is something we come here for, and it's something we work at providing for each other. And if you look at what we are doing here at Holden as a form of religious exercise of things which we hold to be very near and dear to ourselves, I would propose that small group activity in Japan has very similar meanings, like it or not, for the members and the participants in those groups. Now, I don't know if that leaves you with any thoughts or comments you'd like to make at the end, but what it is for a Japanese person to participate in a small group, in a family, if you will, recreate a family. And family in Japan can mean not only your physical family, it can mean your own group, it can mean your school group, it can mean eventually Japan itself, because Japanese define Japan and Japanese as a type of family. That brings you back to the kami concept of the god in the Japanese mind as being something which is indigenous to those islands, to those mountains and bays and beaches and rivers, and that fulfilling one's responsibility to the group in Japan is something that has profound ethical and moral and all the religious, perhaps, overtones to it. When we see Japanese who are being, may seem to us
reclusive or inclined to deal only among themselves. I think we need to see that there's a component in that of something which we're looking to reestablish too through our contacts with each other. I will stop the discussion here since the tape is at an end, but I would welcome comments and criticism and insight from all of you. Thank you.
I wish I'd have met you guys when we got here, so I have all kinds of questions.
Well, we'll be here for a while.
Oh, we're leaving today.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I'm just trying to understand, you know, for her, to try and make life a little more smooth flowing as far as being with us. She thinks we're crazy. I mean, we're talking about, we've got three kids, and our lifestyle is obviously very different from hers. Uh-huh. In that, just the mannerisms, you know, my kids walk around belching and passing gas, and she's, you know, in Japan, it's bad manners to yawn in public, and my kids are, you know, and I think, oh, this poor girl, she's...
This is some of that spontaneity and creativity that people want to start teaching, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I have lots of questions. And
I hope some good impressions are going home, too.
Oh, I think so. Let's hope. Yeah. Well, we have a year to corrupt it. Yeah. Should we go eat? Hungry?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.